This is agenda A-05-10, so we've had five administrative agendas, this is the fifth one?
Yep.
This year. And item 1A through E are all yours.
Thank you, Chairman.
That was easy, I don't have to...
Okay, item 1A is just the summary of the fiscal year 2010 financial information, and the information contained in the briefing memo is as of June 29th. In category 01, which is personnel, as you'll recall, we had a projected shortfall of approximately $125,000. We did go before IFC on June 24th, and they did approve that work program. So $125,000 has been transferred from our reserve category into personnel services. In category 05, which is equipment, the Board of Examiners on June 8th approved two replacement vehicles for the rail safety program. Both of these vehicles are for Las Vegas, and I think we've received both of them. They're both here, they've both arrived. There was some savings after the purchase of the vehicles due to the downsizing that we did in the size of the vehicles, and as a result, we were able to purchase some replacement chairs for Hearing Room A in Las Vegas and in Carson City. So those chairs will hopefully be received sometime this month. And in Carson City, we had a chair washing event a week ago, and we washed all of the chairs that we'll be keeping. So if Las Vegas would like to have a chair wash, it was a very successful event. Also, we purchased some new...
Madam Executive Director, could you give us instructions on how you organized that chair washing event? I mean, at some point, not now.
Yeah, in fact, I'll defer to Ms. Ska because this happened during my office. Also, we purchased some new video conferencing equipment. The installation will occur this month in Carson City and in Las Vegas during the final tenant improvement build-outs at the new building. It's hard to believe, but the existing equipment for Hearing Room A was purchased in 2002. So as a result, it's no longer supported. So it was time that we purchased this equipment in the event that something goes amiss, we wouldn't be able to have it repaired. In category 09, which is expert consultants, the Board of Examiners on June 8th approved regulatory operations staff contract with Hudson River Group, and this is for assistance with Sierra Pacific Power Company's depreciation study for both electric and gas, which was filed on June 1st. In category 11, which is our ERA grant monies, we're continuing to draw down the expenses, to pay expenses. Currently, we've drawn down about $102,000. So we're, I think, right on track with that grant money to date. And as we've discussed before, with respect to the budget cuts from last legislative session, our optimum reserve is between 2.2 and 2.7 million. And at the end of this fiscal year, fiscal year 2010, we're projecting to have 2.4 million. So we're right within that optimum range. Are there any questions about the fiscal year 2010 financials?
Not from me.
Okay, item 1B is a draft of our strategic plan. The strategic plan is required as part of our biennium budget request, which the commission will vote on in August. I thought it might be helpful to provide the commission with the draft so that you can take a look at it, and if you have any revisions that you'd like to see or have parts of it that you'd like to discuss. I would like to bring to your attention a few of the changes from the last strategic plan. On page 4, goal number 5 was just updated to reflect internal processing changes for tracking compliances. On page 5, goal number 7 was changed, in order to obtain a more accurate performance measurement. This is for the consumer division, and what they've done is they've delineated written complaints into level one and level two complaints. Level one complaints will be the complaints that the division will handle independently. Level two complaints are those that they require assistance from other staff divisions. So with respect to level one complaints, 75% of those complaints will be resolved within 45 calendar days. And with respect to the level two complaints, we're anticipating that 100% of those will be resolved pursuant to staff counsel's office. So those timelines will change depending on the complexity of the complaint. On page 6 and 7, goals 10 and 11 were updated to more accurately report inspection activities and how those are measured. On page 9, goal number 14 was updated as that prior goal was achieved. So it was changed to reflect additional enhancements to the electronic and filing records management system. Also on page 9, goal number 15 was updated to more accurately reflect our information technology status. And goal number 16 was eliminated, and again, that was an information technology goal, and that was completed. Those are basically the changes from last time. I'd be happy to go through this line by line if you'd like, or I would entertain any questions or comments that you may have.
I have no questions. Is any other commissioners?
I have a couple.
Okay.
But not line by line.
Okay.
I'm looking on page 1, and I was noticing that we're sending 50% of the commissioners and administrative attorneys to adjudicating techniques and industries issue training on an annual basis, both in the strategies and the objectives section, but then also we have in both the strategies and objectives section a statement that you utilize hearing officers for time-sensitive and time-consuming dockets, and I wonder if some of those may be inconsistent goals. And I guess, and like you had mentioned, that this hadn't really changed from the last biennium, so I'm wondering if, do we have any historical understanding of why we are utilizing hearing officers for time-sensitive and time-consuming dockets as opposed to the commissioners themselves?
No.
We got one hearing. We got three commissioners and one hearing officer. So it seems kind of. I just don't know where that came from. I'm curious.
Mm-hmm. I think it way back when. I'm not so sure it was time-sensitive dockets. It may have been with respect to just commissioner caseloads, and if they're tied up in a major case, then, you know, the time sensitive may have been just the quick, you know, the quick 252s that require, you know, federal statutory timelines, just to be able to handle some of those easier ones that you have to put on the calendar, but they don't necessarily require, you know, a lot of hearing time and such. And then the time-consuming dockets, I think at the time it was the water and perhaps the sewer dockets was the thought on that, where they take up a lot of time. And we could certainly put in under the objective, you know, we could add hearing officers into that training objective if that's helpful.
I guess I'm just a little, like if you look at number 8, it's on under objective, it says eliminate or reduce commissioner assignments of time-sensitive and time-consuming dockets, and gosh, I'm not sure what our job is then. So, to me, it just sounds kind of funny.
You know, if I could just jump in here, I didn't really have any questions, although I did have that marked here. Because we've gone to a different rotation system where we don't actually assign those particular types of dockets to hearing officers, it's just as they come in, if there's actually five of us in the mix with Dave Noble, and if five cases come in, they come in, they're assigned as they come in to each individual, unless there's a case that a hearing officer can't hear. So, you know, I'm not really sure we even need number 8. Maybe that'd be the easiest thing.
Yeah. Agreed. And perhaps take your suggestion, Crystal, and add in commissioners, administrative attorneys, and hearing officers into the training for adjudicating and industry issues.
Yep, absolutely.
Just add the hearing officer in?
Yes.
Yeah, I think that's a good idea.
So send 50%. Does that mean I'll send half a hearing officer? Just so.
Well, you've got two.
an eighth of a Dave.
Yeah.
Okay, good suggestion, Commissioner.
You get a lot more than a Dave.
Dave, you get 2 hours a year.
The other one I had was on page 3, goal 4. And as much as I really think this is a wonderful goal, I think it's maybe perhaps unachievable. I'm not sure that we can eliminate reversal. Since, you know, you go to court, you never know what's going to happen. I'm wondering if maybe we should use the term minimize.
Absolutely.
On page 3.
Eliminate reversal.
Well, we could do it pretty well, though.
You're doing great. You're doing great.
You have to reach for the stars.
I will defer to General Counsel.
General Counsel.
You're right. You're absolutely right. That may be an impossible goal.
General Counsel assures us they can eliminate all.
And I think that was all I had.
Okay. I have nothing further unless someone else does.
Commissioner Wagner?
No. Okay, item 1C is background information regarding our revenues and expenditures and information that has been compiled for our upcoming biannual budget request. And Chairman, if it's okay with you, I'd like to go ahead and go through this memo. And then at the completion of that, perhaps I can hear from each of you regarding your comments on the modules that are here for enhancements and also any enhancements that each of you may have. Is that okay?
That's fine.
Okay. Hopefully you all received a corrected memo last Thursday. The corrections were delineated in bold italics, and there were no corrections to any of the attachments, so your initial packet of attachments should be okay. With respect to revenues, as you know, our budget is funded primarily through the annual regulatory assessment, which is set annually by the Commission. Current projections, based upon a fully funded budget, not including the enhancement models that we'll be discussing in a few minutes, for the next biennium puts the Commission's projected reserve level at fiscal year end 2013 at $2.5 million, with the annual regulatory assessment set at 2.13 mils. So that's essentially a balancing number for us. So if we fully expend all of our categories, don't have any savings, know what we know today, we would be looking at a 2.13 mil assessment. The other revenues that we receive are from a federal gas pipeline safety grant. We have an assessment to the railroads. We receive money from a hazardous waste disposal fee. And we also collect an administrative fee for the administration of the universal energy charge assessment. Attachment A shows the projected revenues, the expenditures, and reserve balances to fiscal year end 2013. And please, again, keep in mind that does not reflect any of the enhancement models. Attachment B shows the regulatory assessment estimated monthly impact on electric and gas customers. With respect to expenditures, Category 01, personnel, this category includes approximately $19 million over the biennium. This amount does not include furloughs or any of the other personnel savings measures that were imposed last legislative session. It's not to say that those won't be imposed again, but they do have a sunset provision currently. In this category, there are two proposed enhancements for your discussion and guidance. Enhancement module number 1 would retain the two ERA grant-funded positions. And these positions are an electrical engineer on regulatory operations staff side and a policy advisor. At the time the grant was approved, the Commission expressed an interest to permanently retain these two positions. The fiscal impact over the biennium is estimated to be $343,200.
And attachment C provides the written justification and the cost detail. For module number 2, this is a request by regulatory operations staff to adjust the unclassified salaries for one water engineer and two electrical engineers. The estimated cost over the biennium is about $58,000. Attachment D does provide the written justification and the cost detail breakdown. For category 02, which is out-of-state travel, our base budget includes approximately $11,000 for each year of the biennium. We believe this is a sufficient amount. The commission has done very well in getting stipends. And, you know, keep in mind that as we move forward in the event, we do have a shortfall. We can do a work program for up to $20,000 each year of the biennium. For category 3, which is in-state travel, the base budget includes approximately $123,000 for each year of the biennium. For category 04, operating expenses, the base budget includes approximately $1,043,000 for each year of the biennium. Then we have enhancement module number 3, and this would be paid for out of operating expenses if the commission so chooses. And this is in regards to the National Regulatory Research Institute annual assessment fee, which is approximately $24,000 each year. Attachment D does provide you with some of their project information and their publication report. Last biennium, the commission opted not to budget for this assessment for the current biennium due to the state fiscal crisis, and also at the time, the commission did not feel that NRRI was really providing much of a benefit to the state of Nevada. During this current biennium, commission employees have utilized some of NRRI's research and publication resources, and they have participated in some of their free webinar and teleseminar presentations. NRRI has been reaching out to the commission in an effort to gain back our business. So this is module number 3 for your feedback today. For category 05, equipment, the budget will include approximately $25,000 to replace one pipeline safety vehicle in fiscal year 2013. It is expected that this vehicle will meet the mileage criteria of 100,000 miles. So it will need to be replaced. We would keep on the same track as the vehicles that we just purchased and go with the clean vehicle for the better environmental performance. For category 09, expert consultants, the budget will include approximately $65,000 for the biennium. This is for regulatory operations staff for assistance for a certified depreciation expert in its review of the NV Energy depreciation case, which is scheduled to be filed on or before June 2011. Category 10, out-of-state audit. The base budget includes approximately $1,400 for the biennium for out-of-state audits of utilities and railroads whose records are located outside the state. Category 16, vehicle operations. The base budget includes approximately $48,000 for the biennium to support continued funding for 13 agency vehicles. Category 26, information services. The budget will include approximately $366,000 for the biennium, and this is for new and replacement computer hardware and software. Category 30 is our training and development plan. The budget will include approximately $154,000 for the biennium, and that's to continue to fund and administer our training and development plan. The briefing memo also contains a summary of the fiscal impact for each of the enhancement modules. That concludes my review of the memo, and I would appreciate your feedback on the budget enhancements that are proposed, and also welcome any enhancements that you all have. Thank you.
Okay. So I guess Anybody have any comments with regard to enhancements 1, 2, and 3? I guess we can take them individually. The ARRA grant-funded positions, electrical engineer and policy advisor. My feeling is we should continue that, but that's just my feeling on it. If anyone else, I don't know if you have another opinion or not.
Well, I would suspect that the area of renewable energy is going to get even more. Our workload is going to increase, not decrease, in that area. So I think it certainly supports the two positions you have here.
And just with the estimations, it does look like it would be a 1 cent impact per month on the electric and gas customers. Again, given all that we know today, that would be if we have no savings, we fully expend our budget. So that would be, you know, worst case scenario, a 1 cent increase.
It looks like on that chart you've got, Crystal, that the fiscal impact for all three modules would be some $425,000. And I get you've got a mill of 2.22 for a 0.37 increase per month on residential gas and electric customers. And that 0.22, that would be consistent with keeping the reserve at your suggestion.
That's correct, Chairman. That is correct. And if I could note, just there on number 3, the NRRI annual assessment, it does say $24,000 for the biennium. It's actually $48,000 for the biennium. However, it doesn't change the mill overall impact on the customer.
This is just a discussion item, so.
Module 2.
Yeah, Module 2. Kind of talked about them all together, didn't it? Yeah, Module 2 is the water engineer, the electrical engineer, and my position is probably we ought to include all three modules. I don't really. That's the NRRI is probably the one that I'm on the bubble about, but I do know that we have had people that have used that recently, and there have been some internet seminars, and a couple that I actually participated in. I did find it useful. I don't know that I could justify $48,000 over a biennium, to be quite honest with you, when I think about, you know, we're fighting to keep maybe some positions here that were temporary, and I'd like to keep those. So I like the first two modules. I think we should definitely keep those employees if we can. If there's anything to give up, I would give up the NRRI. That's just my 2 cents on it.
And with respect to the NRRI, it is an annual, they call it an annual assessment, but it is a contribution. I think they would accept less than the full amount. It's more of a donation. Because their services technically are free. You know, you're not charged for the information that they provide. So if the commission wanted, you know, perhaps we could budget less and maybe make some contribution, maybe just not the full $48,000 over the biennium. That's an option. If you wanted to do maybe $24,000 and do 12 a year, that might be more realistic based on the little bit that we're actually utilizing their services.
I have no objection to that. I know Phil Jones has probably called you, Crystal. I know he's called me. He's the commissioner from Washington that's in charge of this for NARUC, and I know it's a Scott Hempley Full Employment Act, I guess. But,
boy, and I'm not going to touch that one.
I guess my point is, and it's a soft point, which is that we really have limited use of this. I guess if there was somebody that was a real advocate, and I'd be happy to hear from anybody, if somebody uses this and really believes strongly we should have it, but I don't know from staff or general counsel's office. I think it's used sometimes, but not a great deal. That might be a good way to split the baby. We could assuage NARUC and Bill Jones by offering some money, and maybe that would replicate our actual usage too. We could always say we were just confused. We thought it was 24 forever.
One option too would be not to include it in our biennium budget, and then when we get to this fiscal year, decide at that point in time whether we want to contribute and how much to contribute.
Mm-hmm.
That might be a good idea.
And typically we have some savings. Mm-hmm. You know, this year we bought chairs. But typically there is some savings if you wanted to go that route.
Well, I kind of like Donna's suggestion that maybe we hold back and see what's out there first.
And look at what our activity, our use of that service this fiscal year, and then go forward next year. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
that's right.
Okay.
On the issue of increasing staff's engineering salaries, mm-hmm. at the risk of getting on my soapbox, this has been long overdue, and it, frankly, huge concern. I mean, these guys have real expertise. They have to go to hearings. They have to file prepared testimony. They're not classified, and it makes it very difficult for us to. I mean, it's amazing to me we've retained the level of expertise that we have, and I think they need to be rewarded at that time. So I think this is something that we really need to get behind and support.
I appreciate that feedback, Commissioner. I absolutely agree. I think the only downside here is just the state of the state.
Sure. I understand that.
But I think it's worthwhile to at least ask.
I do too. And if there's any need for discussion or people have questions on that, I can certainly make myself available to have a discussion with whoever would like to know why that's important.
You may regret saying that.
I probably would. But it's been a huge bugaboo of mine for several years now, and I think it's about time it got addressed. Okay. To the extent that we can, I understand the times we're in.
Right. If I could just add, currently, in the event these salary changes are approved, currently, it doesn't create an internal inequity, but we do have an electrical engineer on the policy, in policy analysis currently, who happens to be the manager. So it doesn't create an internal inequity at this time, but in the event we have an electrical engineer in policy support or policy analysis as a policy advisor, that position would be paid less than an electrical engineer on staff. So I just want you all to be mindful of that. And we typically, recruit from staff to come over as a policy advisor. So somebody would have to be crazy to leave the staff side to come over and work for a commissioner for less money.
How about a commissioner who's working for less money? All right.
Crystal, have we contemplated what we would need to do to justify bumping up the salary for the policy advisor position?
Yeah, actually, Donna, I think, has prepared some information that she can walk you through. And if I could just add, currently, with respect to the policy advisor position, the spec for the position does not require that they have and maintain a PE. Whereas on staff side, those positions do have that requirement. So it's not to say that we can't add that requirement in, just currently at this time we don't have it for the policy advisor piece. Do you want to share what you have on?
We have four policy advisor positions, and raising their salary to be equivalent to what we're asking for the water engineer and the electric engineer, we're looking at about $17,000. Per fiscal year. The impact to the ratepayer, residential ratepayer, is zero. There's no adjustment by adding policy advisors.
is there a distinction in the salary on the policy advisor side between engineer and between the different positions, or are they still a flat salary for all policy advisors?
There's no distinction between the policy advisors.
All right.
And it is about $3,000 less annually if the engineers were to get the increase,
and the advisors don't.
Mm-hmm. Well, what would it take for us to make it so that in the future we don't have this inequity? Can we take care of that now, or is it something, what do you suggest?
I would take care of it now. If we're going to ask for three positions to be adjusted, why not add another classification? Although it's seven positions, we're looking at three classifications. And the one thing we don't want to do is to create an inequity, knowing it going into this.
And then have to go back later and ask. It's better, to be up front now and say, look, we recognize and realize that this will create an inequity.
This doesn't create any salary compaction issues, does it?
It does not.
Because we already have enough here.
If we fix the inequity now, what's your opinion with regard to whether or not it's going to make it more difficult for us to get the staff salaries fixed? Do you think it's going to impact it any real way, or?
Mm-hmm. No, because this doesn't have any additional fiscal impact on customers.
Right.
So I think we can argue that, you know, the time is now. So I wouldn't think it would impact what they could do, Commissioner, and what they have done in the past. This would be a total of, what do we say, seven positions? Mm-hmm. They may call up and say, pick three.
Two of the three classifications.
Yeah.
They've been known to do that.
Okay. But since there's no additional fiscal impact, I don't really know why they would.
Well, I think we probably ought to try to fix it now while we can, so that we're not constantly going back to the well. But
mm-hmm. Well, and I think our recruiting statistics will support getting these adjustments for these positions.
Yeah, those are my thoughts.
I've just been debating whether I want to open this can of worms, but is there any appetite for us to, since we're talking about salary compaction issues and equity issues, two commissioners here make less than several positions, and I'm not talking about myself, but there are two commissioners that make less than several positions in this organization. Is there any appetite to bring the two commissioners' salaries up to what the chairman makes so there's no distinction in that? I mean, we're only talking probably $10,000 a year, $20,000 over the biennium, and you're talking about $17,000 for the same purpose. I don't know that maybe, as we've said before, this is the time to address that. Yeah, I don't have any purpose in saying that, but except that maybe it would right the compaction issues a little bit. And I realize that's a lightning rod, always. But it's a problem that exists, and it's not my problem, and it's not really the two commissioners' problem, but it's an institutional problem. It's a salary compaction problem that needs to be addressed at some point. And if we're addressing it in two other areas, why not just add the two commissioners in and ask for their salaries to be the same as the chairman or the chairperson, and there be no distinction between salary for the chairperson and level. At least that would give some small buffer between what staff counsel and general counsel and others make. It's just a thought. It's a discussion, so I'm discussing.
The governor's office makes those appointments and designates the chair. I'm not sure what their appetite would be to have all three paid at the same. I certainly think that there is an argument to elevate the commissioner salaries to that of above that of our chief attorneys, because as you know, our chief attorney, Commissioner Burtonshaw, took a salary decrease.
Right.
So that is something.
These chief attorneys hear about this constantly, by the way.
I don't say anything.
Well, Well, we also have two other positions that make the same thing as Commissioner Rankin without the governor's appointment. So, I mean, it's a little deeper than that. What I'm saying has no reflection on the governor's ability to appoint a chairperson. I just think the commissioners, I mean, this is a self-effacing way for me to bring it to you, is to say I'm not looking for a raise, and I may not be the chairman, I have no idea one way or the other, but whoever the chairman is, and however that selection process takes place, it does, but the salaries are the same. If someone has a better idea how to address the compaction issue, I'd be all willing to listen, but I'm not advocating the chairperson get a raise. I'm just advocating that we at least we address some sort of a compaction issue here.
Yeah, if it's possible, Donna, and I have no idea, you're the expert in this. I think it probably, and I'm not going to speak for staff counsel, but I do think that the commissioners definitely should make more than general counsel, and at least I'll speak for myself. I mean, you shouldn't have to take a salary reduction to come over to become a commissioner.
And I guess it's the same argument in terms of taking a salary reduction as an electrical engineer if you're on staff and you go to policy. If you buy into that logic, then we have the same problem at the commissioner level.
We absolutely do. I would recommend something in between the $118,000 for the chief attorney and that of the chairman. I think, just my own opinion of this, is that the governor's going to want to have some distinction in pay for appointing one member as a chairperson. So, just to throw out $120,000, we could raise it by about $3,000 and make it $120,030 or something along that.
I have a question. Well, what was the basis for the chairman making more? That was when the chairman had more responsibilities.
That's correct.
I mean, I don't know that there's really a distinction now, but that's just me.
No, I agree. I think AB 510 changed the paradigm here, and as this meeting is mute evidence of the fact of the type of administrative work now that the executive director does along with the commission secretary, and I don't even know that there's really any basis for the chairman making more. I certainly don't think that in particular in these economic times there's any basis for saying just because you have the title you make more. I think that's silly. So I don't think the work follows the pay anymore. Maybe the answer is reduce the chairman's salary. but I really wouldn't have a problem with that if we didn't already have this compaction issue that we've got. And I just think at some point we're going to have to recognize the fact that we've got some five or six positions here that pay the same or more than commissioners make. And so that's why I'm saying just raise everybody to what the current chairman makes, like Commissioner Wagner says. It said just giving effect to the fact that the executive director does most of those administrative duties. There's really no difference for the no real real need for the chairman to make more. My thoughts.
There is no impact to our residential ratepayers by raising or requesting that the salary for the commissioners be raised to that of the chairman. And I would suggest that we use as our argument the internal compaction with the chief attorney and try to stay away from the AB 510 because mm-hmm. a few legislators may decide, well, we've created AB 510, therefore let's reduce the salary. So we want to elevate the salary. So that would be my suggestion to justify.
Well, yeah. I mean, I wouldn't want to see anybody's salary reduced. To solve the compaction problem, but I will tell you that you'll have Terry Teenhouse and the state personnel in up there testifying with you on the salary compaction issue. So if you can find a way to address it, I think as everyone has said, we have the opportunity to do it. So why not? And by the way, the first thing off the table for me if we get in trouble in the legislature is the commissioners' salaries. because I think the my priority list would be these ARRA grant funded positions and the enhancements to the salaries to the water and the electrical engineer. Those are more important than the compaction issue, but and that's just for internal discussion only. But so I'll capitulate pretty quickly if I see we have to jettison something. But I just think if we've got the opportunity to have a dialogue, let's go ahead and do it.
Well, you know, that's helpful, too, because if we do get the call from a legislator and say, all right, you've asked for adjustments to four classifications, you can have two. Which two? We're going to be needing some guidance on that.
And that takes care of my concern, because I'm really concerned about, I'm trying to make, I really, really want those electrical engineers on staff and water engineers on staff to start making as much as the BCP engineers.
Right.
I will put that in the justification.
if we have this module 2, I guess here's my question. What is the impact of raising salaries for these two individuals vis-a-vis module 1 for the ARRA grant positions? Do we need to raise those salaries also?
If we are successful with the elevation of the electrical engineer salaries, the ARRA salary will automatically be factored in, because in the unclassified pay bill, it is designated as each. So when there's an each, it would be all of those positions within that designation. So it would be up to the commission whether or not we want to pay that position at that elevated salary, but the max would be the same as the others.
So that 57,774 in Module 2, does that contemplate these? It does not.
It does not include the ARRA position.
But again, those adjustments are so
minor. That adjustment would be minor.
Okay. That's all I have. Anyone else?
Anybody else? Do they have enhancement modules to add?
Well, the chairman added this one. Are there any other enhancements that the commission wishes to add at this time, other than the commissioner's salary?
Chris, let me ask you real quick. I'm looking at the in-state and out-state travel.
Yes.
Is there an increase to the budget from the last biennium?
There is not. That's based on our base budget. Keep in mind that we can enhance that by $20,000 with a work program without having to go to IFC in the event we need to add additional dollars in those categories.
And we did add $13,000 in this fiscal year, which is considered our base year, to cover the cost of in-state travel. So that adjusted base numbers what we will ask for in the next biennium. So there is a $13,000 increase over what we asked for during the last legislative process.
We can ask for that $20,000 work program once, right?
Mm-hmm. Per category. It's a housekeeping work program.
Right.
We can move 20,000 in or out of the category.
Okay. I have no other comments or questions. I don't know if anyone else does.
Okay. Well, thank you. That was really helpful. I appreciate the feedback. We will need to schedule another administrative agenda meeting for you to vote on the final budget before it goes over to the budget office, which it is due September 1st. So we are looking at August 4th now for an administrative meeting at noon. I think I've heard back from a few of you on that, so we'll try to get that scheduled.
I think I got an email today. Is that's the day of our regularly scheduled agenda, or is it the 11th? I think the email I had said the 11th.
The 11th doesn't work for everyone, so now we're looking at the 4th, and the 4th is not a regular utility meeting day. It would be the week prior.
You've got some hearings on the 3rd, so maybe here on the 3rd.
Yeah. Did you want to take up Item D?
I would love to. Item D is regarding the assistant secretary position. As you know, this position was recently vacated, and pursuant to NRS 703130 sub 5, the executive director, with the approval of the commission, shall designate an assistant secretary. At this time, I would like to recommend Breanne Brewer as acting assistant secretary. This will allow the commission to incur some salary savings and provide for flexibility in meeting the divisional needs until I am ready to designate a permanent appointment for your approval. We really need to recover some of our terminal leave payout, and it is expected that we won't do that until probably the middle of September. So I would anticipate coming back to the commission at that time with a permanent designation. So at this time, I am recommending Breanne. She does have the qualifications to act in this position. She has the policy support and the business process service divisions. And this would be for a vote today.
Well, yeah. I guess the first question is, we're talking about salary, and you know, I guess if you're in the, I see what you're asking for, but if she's going to be doing the work, I mean, how are we going to compensate her? She's basically going to be compensated, I guess, at the same level she is now for doing more work. That just seems inconsistent with me, and maybe I need to hear more about that. Maybe you all have that worked out. I just don't know.
Your observation is correct, Chairman. She would stay in her existing position, which is a classified position. The only way that we can compensate her for these additional duties are to permanently designate her into the assistant secretary position. And in that case, that would then vacate the BPS position. So I just don't think that, you know, one, we're ready to do that yet, and we'd really like to give it some time with my supervision and oversight just to get through the next little bit here and see, you know, this is a critical position. I want to make sure that I don't make a mistake in making the appropriate designation. And, you know, in fairness to Ms. Brewer, I don't know that she wants to vacate her other position and fill it permanently at this time.
It's also consistent practice that we've asked other division managers when they have a vacant position that we need to leave it vacant long enough that we have expired the cost of that terminal leave.
Is this also complicated by Ms. Brewer's current position being a classified position and the assistant secretary being unclassified?
Yes.
Well, it sounds like, assuming Ms. Brewer is willing to do this, you know.
Yes, I am. It's,
thank you. That was what I was waiting for.
Okay.
But it's you know, I didn't want it to be appear like, you know, involuntary servitude. Not that Crystal would do that, but it does preserve options in the event that if Ms. Brewer doesn't want to pursue the position, that, you know, she hasn't vacated a position that to go back to. At the same time, gives Ms. Jackson the opportunity to further, I think, tutor, mentor, and train Ms. Brewer, and to make a decision at a later date. So it does preserve some options. I just had to ask the obvious question about doing more for less money. And
well,
but if she's go ahead, I'm sorry.
No, excuse me, Chairman. I was just going to draw to your attention that typically we're able to compensate someone in the classified service who's working outside the scope of their job with an additional 5% in pay. But with the current crisis, the governor has
right.
put a freeze on those adjustments.
Yeah, I was aware of that.
Random out in February.
Yeah, I was aware of that, and that's why I was saying that there's really nothing we can do for her except just elicit the fact that she's willing to take this on and give it a try, so.
And thank her a lot.
Yeah.
My condolences. So condolences may be in order.
I think Commissioner Wagner's scaring her.
I guess we have to call for a vote on this one. It's an action item. So are there other questions or comments on it from commissioners? Okay, then I move that we approve the executive director's designation of Bree Brewer as acting assistant commission secretary.
Second.
Concur.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
Or condolences.
So sorry.
See, now we're helping scare you too.
Yeah.
All right. Do I have to call for comments of the general public at these meetings? I guess that's all. Yeah.
Does that? She's got one more.
Okay, go ahead, Ms. Chair.
Just actually, item E is briefing on any other administrative issues. Just have a couple of quick things. One, the Las Vegas building is moving along great. We've been working these last couple of weeks with the building management and some of their contractors on the tenant improvements. I think we've got those pretty much ready to go, so they will go for permitting. And once we have the permit, they will begin construction. So we haven't been given a specific time frame yet. We are thinking anywhere between November and the end of December. So hopefully as we get through this process, we'll be able to narrow that down and give everybody a better idea of when to be prepared to move. Additionally, I received a call this morning from Legislative Council Bureau, and they have completed their audit of our agency. You all may have forgotten about it. It's been going on now for several months. I am scheduled to meet with them next week. They will provide me with a copy of their draft report and also do what they call an exit interview. So I'm hopeful that when we meet again in August, I will be able to provide the results of that LCB audit to you at that time. And that's all I have. Thank you very much.
Okay. Public comment either here or in Carson City? Hearing none, we're adjourned. Thank you.